and welcome to Inspire Indeed on WRIR 97.3 FM, Richmond Independent Radio, radio for the rest of us. My name is Elaine Summerfield. I'm today's host for Inspire Indeed, where we're learning about community issues and the nonprofits and community leaders that are working to address them. And hopefully you'll learn something new and also be inspired to think about how you're making a difference with your deeds. Well, things are hopping down here in the capital of the Commonwealth these days. Last week, the General Assembly session kicked off, and over the weekend, we saw a new set of leaders sworn in with Governor McAuliffe, Lieutenant Governor Northam, and Attorney General Herring. For today's show, I have a familiar voice this time of year. He's been with us before to talk about the goings-on with the General Assembly and the decisions that will be considered by our elected officials, highlighting some policy issues that are sometimes underrepresented or often misrepresented in other media outlets. Michael Cassidy is the president and CEO of the Commonwealth Institute for Fiscal Analysis, which provides independent, nonpartisan information and analyses of Virginia's fiscal and economic issues, with a particular focus on the impacts on low- and moderate-income Virginians. They provide their analysis in plain, non-fiscal-sounding language that is understandable and reports that I often find engaging and compelling. So, without further ado, welcome back, Michael.
Thanks, Elaine. It's a pleasure to be here.
Great. Well, as I mentioned, the Commonwealth Institute does the research and translates complex fiscal analysis into easily accessible formats. I'm probably oversimplifying what you provide. Was I close?
No, you're spot on that our mission is to provide credible and timely but accessible analysis of state fiscal and economic issues to really get behind the numbers and connect the dots for people, both lawmakers and members of the media, but also the general public, to explain these key decisions that Virginia lawmakers are making that affect all of our lives, but particularly the lives of middle-class and low-income Virginians. So as a nonpartisan, nonprofit organization, we provide that analysis to explain trends, connect the dots on what's happening in our state's economy, what's going on with the investments that we're making in Virginia through our state budget and tax policies, and then to use that also in a way to help strengthen the advocacy of others who have a stake in these battles as well, and who are working often very closely on the ground in communities to serve the needs of their local community, and for whom these issues are really important. And we can help strengthen their own work by explaining these issues so that they can lift up their voices and the voices of their own community to lawmakers' ears to have their voice heard.
That makes a lot of sense. And you mentioned connecting the dots, and that's an important piece because none of these issues exist in isolation, right?
Exactly. And so sometimes when you're talking about an issue about, for example, whether Virginia should go forward with expanding Medicaid coverage for low-income working Virginians, you know, just the context of the continued decline in the rates of insurance of people getting insurance through their jobs in Virginia, the growing number of uninsured that we have in the state, the options for how we could extend coverage to more low-income Virginians, all of that context is really important to the particular question of Medicaid expansion. And so our role is often to bring those that information in and to show these trends over time and where we stand right now and how something like health insurance connects up to things like economic opportunity and jobs and job opportunity and financial security. So it's not just a health insurance question.
Exactly.
It's these broader issues too.
Exactly. So I know that the General Assembly just kicked off, as I mentioned, last week, and you're doing this work all year round, but I imagine you're especially busy at this time.
Yes, this is the super busy time while they're in session.
So so this is one of the long sessions this year, correct?
Right, yes. Virginia has long sessions, as they're called, in even-numbered years. So this is a 60-day session that will be over on March 8th. And so it's a sort of a sprint marathon, if you will, where they'll deal with thousands of pieces of legislation. There's sort of a mid-course break that occurs on February 12th, where all the bills that started in a particular chamber, either the House or the Senate, have to pass in that originating chamber, and then they cross over to the other chamber. And so there's that sort of midpoint in the session, which will happen on February 12th. And then it's all supposed to come to a close by March 8th. You know, often it gets extended if lawmakers can't come to an agreement. This is a year that the Virginia lawmakers need to enact a new two-year state budget. And so that's a particularly important issue that will be debated and often is the source of some extended sessions if lawmakers can't come to an agreement on the budget plan for the state. And then the bills are on the governor's desk, and the General Assembly returns. This year it'll be on April 23rd for a one-day veto session to deal with any bills that the governor may veto or amendments that the governor can make. In Virginia, the governor has wide line item veto authority and the ability to make significant amendments to legislation. So April 23rd, they'll be back for a one-day session to deal with all that.
So we'll see more of them later in the spring. Okay.
Yes, indeed.
Okay, great. For those of you who are just joining us, I just want to take a quick break to let folks know you're listening to Inspire Indeed on WRIR 97.3 FM. And I have in the studio with me Michael Cassidy, President and CEO of the Commonwealth Institute for Fiscal Analysis. Michael, what's your website where people can go get more information?
Sure. It's thecommonwealthinstitute.org.
Great. Thank you. And I may ask you to remind us of that throughout the show. So thank you very much. Now, you mentioned that the biennial budget is going to be up for debate and discussion. And that budget originates with the outgoing governor, correct? So
yeah,
McDonald's gone, but his budget's still there, right?
Exactly. It's a funny dynamic we have here in Virginia where the outgoing governor proposes the next two-year budget moments before they leave office. And so the lawmakers are going to be dealing with that introduced budget by Governor McDonnell, and they will have their say in changes or alterations that they will make on that budget. And that will occur long about mid-February as well, long around midway through the session. Mm-hmm. And that will be a key area of debate in the session this term.
Certainly, yeah. I mean, that's arguably one of the largest roles that our elected officials are playing. They have to decide how our money is going to be spent.
Exactly. And the budget really isn't just about the numbers on the page. It's
right.
about what are our priorities as a community? Where
exactly.
are we investing our money in terms of educating our workforce and providing needed services, whether they're health care or public safety or roads as a commonwealth? And the budget is where all of that gets played out. And so it's a very, very key public policymaking tool that Virginia lawmakers have. And it represents all kinds of critical issues in terms of our communities and our state's economy.
So how much of the general or the governor's budget generally gets kept? Like how much gets kept and how much gets changed if they're leaving and somebody new is in office?
Sure. So the General Assembly will make often, you know, fairly significant changes to a governor's proposed spending plan. But it really depends on the issue. It depends on the makeup of the General Assembly and the particular proposals were in the governor's budget. So, for example, lawmakers may decide they want to invest money differently than what the governor had proposed and putting, you know, more money into education and less money into some other area of the budget. All of it, though, is governed by the fact that, like other states, Virginia has to balance the budget. And mm-hmm. so, unlike the federal government, the state can't run an operating deficit. And so they're within the constraints of how much revenue is available, lawmakers then have to allocate within that sort of top line. And so there will certainly be a lot of key jockeying around reallocating the budget to represent more closely the priorities of the lawmakers as opposed to the governor.
So were there any surprises in his budget that you saw?
I think more than surprises, I would say that there's some stuff in the budget that are contrary to a lot of what your listeners have been probably hearing. You know, so for example, when you look more closely at the funding for K-12 education, you see that, you know, a lot of the headlines showed that Governor McDonnell proposed investing more money in education. But when you look behind the numbers, you see that he was actually cutting spending in his budget by about $65 million. And that's because while, you know, what he did was he sort of toyed with the core educational funding formula of the state to ignore different changes in the cost of educating kids, like things like the cost of textbooks and sort of non-personnel costs. He also cut salaries to support some school employees. The state currently helps out school districts in the Washington, D.C. suburbs where the cost of living is quite high. He proposed to reduce that extra support that the state provides to local school districts in that region of our state.
Interesting.
And so there were, you know, about $100 million in cuts included in the governor's budget. And then he proposed some small boosts to particular K-12 programs, plus some funds for school construction. And so when you look overall, you see that we still have some big challenges here in Virginia in terms of the adequate funding of K-12 education by the state, where, you know, during the recession, a lot of cuts were made in that area to help balance the state budget. And because of the slow economic recovery and the ongoing challenges that we're facing in our state budget, you see those kinds of reductions still happening. And that's a lot of the stuff that wasn't really captured in the headline coverage of the governor's budget when he introduced it just prior to Christmas.
And were there any things that maybe the Commonwealth Institute saw as positive in the governor's budget?
Sure. One thing that was very positive is Governor McDonald proposed to continue improvements that were made recently to a very important tax credit program for low-income working families. It's called the Earned Income Credit, and it helps low-income working families putting more money back in their pockets and provide some targeted tax relief to folks who are low wage. They're working. You have to be working to get the credit. And there were some recent improvements made to that program that Governor McDonald proposed to continue, which was an important protection for a lot of over 100,000 low-income working families benefit from those recent improvements. And so that was a really great sign.
Yeah, that is a good sign. And so that encourages people to keep working, to stay at it. They're able to get some public assistance in the form of a tax credit.
Exactly. And so especially in these difficult economic times when it's hard to make ends meet.
Or maybe you have to take a job that is lower paying than what you're accustomed to.
Exactly. Yeah. And this earned income credit serves as almost a wage boost to those low-income working families who qualify for the credit. And so at the federal level, for example, there's a similar earned income credit. And it's been shown to be among the most effective anti-poverty programs that we have. It lifts more people above the poverty line than any other safety net program. And so similarly, our state version of the program is incredibly important as a means of helping provide targeted tax relief to hardworking low-income families, especially in these difficult economic times.
Well, it's good to hear that there was that included in the governor's budget, and hopefully it's something that would be retained as it goes through the channels in the General Assembly. Well, again, if you're just joining us, you're listening to Inspire Indeed on WRIR 97.3 FM. And joining me today is Michael Cassidy of the Commonwealth Institute for Fiscal Analysis. And where can folks reach you?
Sure. So they can reach us on our website, and they can sign up to receive alerts and information about our work. And we have a blog that we put up posts on a regular basis. And you can go to our website, thecommonwealthinstitute.org, to sign up for those alerts.
And see all the links there.
Exactly.
Well, great. Well, I know that a lot of the work that the Commonwealth Institute focuses on, you touched on it at the beginning of our program, is related to the Affordable Care Act and the potential for expansion of Medicaid for uninsured Virginians through the Affordable Care Act. Now, I understand that Virginia opted not to expand Medicaid, even though it was allowable at the beginning of this calendar year, 2014. Can you remind our listeners and remind us where we stand in Virginia on expansion of Medicaid?
Sure. So that is going to be a big battle in the current General Assembly session, is whether or not Virginia is going to move forward with expanding Medicaid so that we can offer health insurance to over 400,000 low-income, mostly working folks throughout the Commonwealth who are currently uninsured. The General Assembly has a special Medicaid Reform Commission that's been looking at the issue and overseeing a set of early reforms to the Medicaid program that were laid out by lawmakers last year as a precursor for moving forward with expansion. Most of those reforms have been accomplished, and so there's now going to be a big discussion about saying, okay, now we're in a position to move forward with expanding coverage. It's been a priority that Governor McAuliffe campaigned on during the campaign.
He campaigned on that very clearly, very loudly.
Exactly. I mean, he said he wouldn't sign a budget that doesn't include Medicaid expansion. He pointed to the jobs that would be supported by the federal funds Virginia would draw down from expanding Medicaid as a key part of his jobs plan. He even pointed to the very significant state budget savings that would come to Virginia.
How do you save money if you're spending more on Medicaid? How does that happen?
It can sometimes sound a little bit counterintuitive, but when you roll up your sleeves and look at how things actually work, you see that there's a wide array of services that Virginia currently pays for uninsured Virginians with what we call state general fund dollars, which are our state tax dollars. And these are the very same people who would now have coverage under a Medicaid if the state moves forward with expansion as allowable under the Affordable Care Act. And
like,
the thing is that
like
the
what
affordable...
populations? What populations would that be?
Sure. And so the Affordable Care Act allows states to lift eligibility to about 138% of the federal poverty limit, which is a little over $20,000 for a family. And those folks would now have coverage through Medicaid. And the part of the Affordable Care Act is very generous payment terms by the federal government where they're going to pay 100% of the cost of covering those newly eligible folks in the first few years, and then no less than 90% in the out years, which is a great deal for Virginia. Right now, our existing Medicaid program is a 50-50 match for the feds. So to have the federal government paying 100% or even 90% is a very good deal. And so when you look at how the state then would need to allocate its own resources, there's now a number of things that we wouldn't have to be paying state general fund dollars to support in uncompensated care payments, for example, to hospitals who have to treat uninsured folks, to a large number of folks who come to our community service agencies who provide community-based, local mental health and substance abuse services. A large chunk of those folks are uninsured who'd now be covered through Medicaid.
But people will argue that we're still paying for it. That's our tax dollars paying for Medicaid.
Sure.
What do you say to them?
So there's a couple of things I think that are important here. One is to realize that there's other unmet needs in our community that, a better allocation of our limited resources, when you think about in the area of a lot of community-based mental health and substance abuse services, there's long waiting lists for particular services. And if we free up money with the basic payment for the medical care itself through insurance, we would have the ability to allocate funding for other areas that are maybe other priorities. The other thing we could do is that's really an important part of how lawmakers have begun to structure this approach here in Virginia, is to put some of those early year savings into a reserve fund, sort of a bank account, if you will, to cover those out year costs. So when the federal match rate starts to go down from 100% to 90% over time, we would then have in reserve the funds we need to cover those state costs going forward. And that's a very fiscally responsible way to handle the kind of early year savings you see from the way the financing of this opportunity is structured, but also to cover your costs that you're going to have later on down the road.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so you're right. That is fiscally sound to look at it that way. But is it fiscally sound for the federal government to be sending all this Medicaid funding to states when the federal government is facing such a huge deficit?
Well, one of the things that I think is important to remind ourselves of is that the Affordable Care Act actually reduces the federal deficit. So when the act was enacted, the Congressional Budget Office, who is tasked with figuring all these things out, assessed the cost of the bill, and they found that it reduced the federal budget by over $100 billion over 10 years. And that's because there's other parts of the Affordable Care Act that bring in revenue to cover the cost of that the federal government incurs by this significant expansion of coverage through Medicaid expansion, for example, or for these new marketplaces, these exchanges where folks can buy private coverage. And so the Affordable Care Act as a whole, it was actually deficit reducing, which is an important thing for us to remember, especially as we hear so much in the current debate about federal deficits and federal debt issues, is that this piece of legislation is not part of the problem. It's one of the very few pieces of social policy that was enacted that paid for itself. The real challenge for us here in Virginia is sort of the act is going forward. The Supreme Court's upheld it. The recent government shutdown in Congress showed how difficult it is to try to unwind and defund the thing. And so for state lawmakers, the choice that's on the table for them is what's best for our state. We've got some options on the table that allow a large number of Virginians to get health insurance. We've got some ways to structure it to make sure that we can manage the cost for our state in a fiscally responsible way. And so I think it's a critically important decision that they can make to move forward with those choices that they have.
Well, it sounds like something that Commonwealth Institute is going to continue to stay on top of over the next few months. Now, how do you recommend your listeners or our listeners stay on top of it as well?
Sure. So certainly they can sign up to get information on our analysis from our website at thecommonwealthinstitute.org. There's also a broad-based and growing coalition called the Healthcare for All Virginians Coalition that includes individuals as well as organizations who are advocating on behalf of Virginia moving forward with expanding Medicaid coverage. And their website is havecoalition.org. That's havcoalition.org, all one word. And folks can also sign up there to be informed on the activities of that coalition who are pushing forward for Virginia to have more health care options for all Virginians.
For all Virginians. Well, if you're just joining us, you're listening to Inspire Indeed on WRIR 97.3 FM. Michael Cassidy is here from the Commonwealth Institute for Fiscal Analysis, and he's sharing some of the work that they're doing currently related to the General Assembly that's now in session. Now, are there any other points of public policy that maybe don't directly involve access to health care or directly impact the budget that you're going to be looking at?
Sure. So there's a couple of key issues that are of strong interest in this session. One is on tuition equity for immigrants in Virginia. This is legislation that would allow basically Dream Act kids, folks who are immigrants who were brought here as children, who are in undocumented status, but who have been in this country basically almost all their lives, graduate from high school, and face a huge barrier to getting higher education, which is being forced to pay out-of-state tuition at Virginia colleges and universities. And so there's legislation that's been introduced that will be debated on providing tuition equity to these students, just like any other in-state Virginia student. And so there are huge economic benefits by having a greater share of our workforce have a college education. We know from the data that undocumented immigrants and their families pay taxes, so they're contributing to our communities, and there's very significant economic and fiscal benefits from the state to have more and more folks with a college education. They earn more, they pay more in taxes. So there'll be a big debate over that issue. There's also a very important issue regarding wage enforcement in Virginia. Unfortunately, lawmakers defunded the unit within our state's Labor Department that used to be the place where folks who were workers who maybe had an unscrupulous boss who didn't pay them the wages they had earned, they could go and file a claim and get some help and relief for winning back their wages. In a very short-sighted policy decision, Virginia eliminated that unit. And last year, some work was done to finally restore it. And so there's going to be continued effort this session to make sure that folks who are out there working hard are able to have recourse, to have folks protect their rights and enforce the wage laws in our state so that they can actually get the wages they've earned and support their families. So there'll be some work on wage enforcement as well.
Now, things in Richmond these days are going to be divided in terms of who has control and power. We're going to have new governor who's a Democrat, who's very clearly pro-Medicaid expansion as well as other things that other Democrats may stand for. And then we have a General Assembly that's still majority people who are going to be against Medicaid expansion. I mean, it just seems like a recipe for gridlock. What do you anticipate is going to happen? Like, what are your greatest hopes for how this is all going to be resolved?
So one of the things that's interesting about the Medicaid expansion debate is that it really has attracted bipartisan support on the Senate side in Virginia. A number of Republican lawmakers in the Virginia Senate have been supportive of expansion. There are very important stakeholders that are in favor of it who have a lot of influence in the public policymaking process in Virginia. For example, the Virginia Chamber of Commerce is in favor of Medicaid expansion. They came out for it during the session last year. They have come out for it again this session. And so it's going to be a real battle royale because normally, if you lined up all those people that I just laid out, you would say, oh, sure, whatever issue that is going to go through because you've got bipartisan support, you've got major, stakeholders who are in favor. And so in a lot of ways, I think the debate is going to turn around some of your core views about the role of government. And so there's going to be a high amount of rhetoric and ideologically driven decisions by lawmakers. Our hope is to get beyond that, and especially when you look at the very significant challenges we face in our economy. I mean, we have a growing number of uninsured folks. And so the real question for Virginia lawmakers is, what are we going to do about that? We know that we all are paying a price for that. I mean, estimates show that the average family health insurance policy premium is about $1,000 higher for folks because of the cost shifting that goes on within our healthcare system by having to cover the cost of uninsured folks who still need healthcare. They're still visiting ERs. They're still needing healthcare services. They just don't have a way to cover them and pay for them. Our hope is that, you know, we can have a full open debate on it where we really roll up our sleeves and take a good hard look at the reality of the situation. The act is here to stay. We've got a set of choices available to us, and do we take them up on it? And if we don't, what's our alternative? What else are we going to do? Because the status quo isn't working.
Well, it is an extremely complex issue, and I know that the Commonwealth Institute is going to be hard at work getting, like you said, cutting through that rhetoric. And really, we've focused on just a small portion of the Affordable Care Act. It's much more complex. We haven't gotten into the whole healthcare marketplace and all of that. That will have to be left for another day. But remind us again how people can stay informed on these issues and keep in touch with the Commonwealth Institute.
Sure. So you can see all of our materials are on our website, which is www.thecommonwealthinstitute.org. We also have a blog called The Half Sheet that folks can sign up for and receive alerts and postings on that, and as a way to join the conversation and stay informed on these key issues.
Great. Well, thanks. Thanks again. We've been listening to Michael Cassidy, president of the Commonwealth Institute for Fiscal Analysis. And Michael, maybe you can come back later on this year to give us an update on how the session went.
That'd be great.
Thank you. And I'd also like to thank the many volunteers down here at WRIR 97.3 FM, people like Jay Westerman, a great sound engineer, and also Jesse Johnson, who's regularly on the soundboard here on Tuesdays. Brittany Tracy, she's always hard at work keeping the Inspire Indeed blog up to date at inspireindeed.blogspot.com. And you know, WRIR is a volunteer-powered station that relies on listeners, supporters, and underwriters to keep this local voice on the airwaves. So if you're interested in joining us by volunteering or donating to the station, you can visit WRIR.org to learn more. My name is Elaine Summerfield, and you've been listening to Inspire Indeed. I hope you've learned something new here today that inspires you to consider how you're going to go out and make a difference with your deeds.